So are we starting a tradition, Mike?
I think we have, just in the sense that we're doing the thing we did last year again. I think that's how traditions begin, right? You just do something more than once with a set period of time in between.
I guess so. I guess that is how traditions start.
There's something kind of funny about, like, we did State of the Apps 2018, right? In December of last year. About, actually, pretty much a year to the day since the last one was released. Okay. That was episode 61, and we're at episode 78, and it's been a year.
Wait, that doesn't make sense.
Well,
that doesn't make sense at all. I don't understand. How can that possibly be? How can we both have 78 episodes and also only have made it 10 episodes in a year? I don't understand. I think you're doing your math wrong, Mike.
Who can argue with Cortexmas?
No one can argue with Cortexmas.
The year-long celebration.
Oh, good. You're finally on board. Cortexmas. It lasts all year.
There's nothing I can do about it. I have to agree.
Perfect. Well, welcome to the State of the Apps, people. The traditional State of the Apps.
So like last time, the way that I figure we'll do this is we'll go through some categories. Mm-hmm. Again, so this idea was based on a blog post that Gray wrote many years ago. I think it was 2014 was the original State of the Apps.
Oh, God, who was that guy?
You were trying to be a blogger then, I think. I think that was what you were what you were going for back in 2014.
Oh, yeah? Do you think that's what I was trying to do? Okay.
I think so. I think so. But it's there. It's on cgpgray.com. And there is a list. And many people have been asking for an update on this. So we decided to do it last year, and we're going to do it again this year. So based upon the previous work, we've got some categories, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite and most used apps within those categories. But before we actually do begin, mm-hmm. Well, I have some thoughts of my own about applications in general in 2019, but ooh. I figured I wanted to get from you some feelings about like your app usage, because the last we heard, you were very like shortcuts and action based. So I wondered if, do you even think about apps in the same way on your iOS devices as you did a year ago?
Oh, you mean because of my fantastic home screen that I'm really happy with?
Your different home screen.
No, Mike, it's fantastic. There's no way around it. It's a fantastic home screen. It makes me happy every time I look at it to see visual consistency without words. Mm-hmm. It brings warmth to my heart. But no, I wouldn't say like I think about it completely differently. Shortcuts is great. It's opened up a lot of ability to do things directly, but apps and their limitations are still the beating heart of what you can do on the platform. So no, I don't feel like I've ascended to a level of nirvana where I'm just thinking abstractly in terms of actions. Mm-hmm. Perhaps one day, mm-hmm. perhaps on a future State of the Apps, but not yet this State of Apps. I guess I'm only slightly more elevated than I was last year in terms of that kind of thinking. But what about you, Mike?
I think I am mostly unimpressed or dissatisfied with the current application crop that I'm using.
Okay.
Because I've been trying to think about, like, what are my favorite apps of this year, right? Because it's the time for that kind of thing. Doing the Upgradies Awards show, right? Like, what is my favorite app of this year? And I was kind of looking at the stuff that I use, and there are a bunch of apps that I really like, and we'll talk about them today, right? But most of them don't really necessarily feel like that they have come on leaps and bounds since last year. And a lot of the applications that I swear by as being the best in their class, I actually think, whilst they continue to be best in class, have mostly stagnated and are not really adding things at a rate that has been consistent with previous years. So I think, like, at the moment, like, looking at the applications that I use, a lot of them are kind of, I'm mostly just ambivalent towards a lot of them. That nothing is particularly standing out for me as being this, like, oh, this app this year that I found, I'm so excited that I found it. A lot of the stuff that I'm using now is increasingly cross-platform and servicey, so that tends to take away a lot of the really exciting stuff. when they're made by big teams rather than like individuals.
Right.
And I know that there are apps out there that people are really excited about that I'm just not, I just haven't gotten around to using. Like I have a bunch of stuff that I keep meaning to try out, but just for whatever reason, I'm not getting to it. But I just think the stuff that I'm using right now, I feel like I'm mostly using because of inertia as opposed to there being a real like, oh, this or that feature keeps me stuck to it.
Interesting. That's a somber note to strike at the beginning of the state of the apps.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what it says. I actually think it's probably a mark on the ecosystem for application development right now, to be honest. I think there's a couple of things going on here. I think that a lot of developers are changing the way that they run their businesses. Many developers are transitioning to recurring revenue streams if they have not already, right? So there's probably a lot of work going on in like business model development as opposed to like feature development. And I also think that we're at a point right now in Apple's iOS software stack where we are probably on the precipice of a change. So no one's going crazy, right? Like, everyone can see some stuff's about to happen, whether it's iOS apps coming to the Mac or another iOS redesign or some kind of new power user features. So I think that there is a little bit of like resistance right now for big change because there is probably big change on the horizon.
I think those are good points. I mean, again, I'm always in favor of apps switching over to a subscription model because that makes me feel more secure in using them.
Anything that I use significantly, I want to pay for regularly if I want it to stick around.
Yeah. And it's like, I have a number of little utility apps that I even wish like, oh, could you just, I wish you could just charge me like $1 a year, $2 a year. Mm-hmm. I know, and I'd be happy to pay for it and you'd have recurring revenue from this thing. Like I'll give an example. There's one I was really sad about. There's a little total utility app. It's just called Sol, S-O-L. And it's a very simple app. All it does is it shows you sunrise and sunset times and the golden hour for photography and what's called civil dawn and civil dusk. Like, what does the sky look like during the day? But it does it in like a nice, beautiful, simple way. And I've always loved it. And it's like, man, I wish this developer, because it's clearly abandoned now and has been for many years, like, I'd sign up for $1 a year subscription.
Oof. This is an unfortunate looking application in today's world, I think.
If you're looking at the pictures of it, yeah. I think it doesn't translate to the way you use it.
Like, okay.
It's pleasant, it's simple, it's straightforward. And I have tried a whole bunch of other sunrise and sunset apps, and I like none of them as much as I like this one. But it's like,
I have this with like world clock applications.
Yes.
So I have been using an app called Clock, K-L-O-K.
K-L-O-K. Yep, I have that same one.
It's a very, very good widget, but it doesn't get a lot of love. I mean, it's had some bug fixes and stuff, but there's not really much there to it. And there have been other apps that I've seen since that are like, that seem to have more features, but don't do the things that I want exactly in the way that I want them, right? But this is like one of those apps where I'm like, everything else that I've seen, I don't like. This one doesn't seem to get updated that often, which makes me consider that maybe it's not necessarily making the developer that much money. So it makes me concerned that it's going to go away. But it's an app that I use probably every single day, just in the widget and the notification shade thing.
Yeah, Clock fits into that same category for me. It's little utility apps, and I would be thrilled if there was some amount of money per year or per quarter that was small just to keep them updated. I'd be happy to do that. So if developers are this year, like, it's a little bit all quiet on the Western front, if it's because they're changing their business models to be more sustainable, I give that two big thumbs up.
Like, same.
I'd be thrilled for that.
Yeah, I'm not complaining in that regard. It's just my point is that I don't really feel like there's a lot of super exciting stuff going on with the apps that I am using. Everything is working mostly fine, and I'll get to some issues with some stuff later on, which I'm happy with, right? Because please don't upend what I'm doing. But it's just a case of, like, I think I've struggled this year to really find stuff that I'm, like, really excited about when it comes to applications. And my hope is just that we're in, like, a holding pattern period. And that there might be some stuff coming around the bend. You know, I actually think there might be an element of I'm the problem as well, where just like,
oh,
I'm getting more boring with what I need to do on my devices.
Right.
So like, I am more hesitant to try out that new app because it's going to ruin everything. Or like, you know, this could be me. Maybe I'm the problem here, actually. I'm just a boring business person now. And like, so like, I'm like, oh, I didn't go near that application because of my precious, precious workflow. I don't know.
Well, I was going to agree with you that you have articulated something which I hadn't really thought about, but I do feel myself. But now that you have framed it in terms of, oh, the problem is with you because you're just a boring business person now, I do not wish to agree and put myself into that frame. So I'm going to slowly back away.
You're an exciting business person, right?
Yes, very exciting.
Well, that's good because now you're telling me it's not me. So that's great. So it's just been a little quiet this year, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Mike, let's get started. The first category is productivity. Now, I think that people probably know where I am with productivity apps. But I want to know, because it always feels like a real problem for you, where are you with to-do apps? Where have you landed at the end of this year?
All right. I'm still, for the majority of my tasks and just my daily work stuff, it's still in Todoist.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right. And look, Todoist is fine. And I like it. And it's you know, it's doing its job. And they've got some interesting stuff that they're working on. Like, I saw this like tweet go by the other day that they're going to add a new feature next year, which can turn your projects into cards in like a Kanban system.
Okay, that's interesting.
And you can choose either view. And I was like, okay, Todoist. And like, look, this is an application where, like, again, Todoist suffers from the cross-platform thing, right?
Yes.
In which Todoist kind of looks like a web app or something. Like, it has no real platform design. It just looks like Todoist. And Todoist looks the same on my Mac, on my iPhone, on the web, and on my Pixel. It's just Todoist, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and it doesn't really have exciting stuff. But they are adding some interesting features. Like, they just added in their date picker, the ability to when you're setting up a task, choose fixed or floating time zone. And they have recently overhauled their date picker, made it better in some ways, worse in others, but like, good, right? Like, I'm happy with the way that kind of stuff is going right now. So much so that, like, whilst I have kept an eye on OmniFocus and have a test task that pops up every time I return home because of that, because of the location stuff that I've been playing around with, and I plan to look at it, but I'm also like, Todoist is doing the job for me, for what I'm using, you know, and how I'm doing it. And I thought about, like, oh, you know, there are these interesting things I could do with OmniFocus, and it's just like a slightly different design, and their customizability when it comes to the contacts and stuff like that. And, you know, I have some, we're going to talk about yearly themes next episode. We'll talk about that later on. But as I'm like thinking about some changes to the way that I want to run my business next year, I might want some different views into stuff. But Todoist is working for me right now. But it's not the only to-do app that I use, obviously.
Obviously.
I use Things for one project.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which is this show.
Whoa. Okay. This is news to me. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It kind of makes me happy to know that Cortex requires an entirely separate to-do manager for you, Mike. Can you explain how and why?
Okay, so I have a shortcut that I trigger whenever this show begins editing.
Okay.
That puts into Things a selection of tasks under headings, which I really like that Things has, with times set to them and all that kind of stuff. The posting process for Cortex is significantly more complicated than the posting process for any of my other shows. And any mistake with Cortex is much larger than any of my other shows as well. And this is in part due to the fact that there are multiple people, me and you, that are involved in that process. So it adds complexities and dependencies. that, and everything must be taken care of, but there are also many, many problems that can occur. So, like, for example, I make my edit, and then I pass to you, and you make your edit, right? I need to make sure that all of the clips and stuff are in the right places, because sometimes when you pass them back to me, they're not. So, like, the ad sounds and stuff are maybe off by 10 seconds because you made an edit, right?
Right.
It's like all of that stuff has to be checked. But when I'm editing a show on my own, well, that's not going to happen because I'm not giving it to anybody else to touch, right? So there's stuff like that. But then there's like making sure the ads are recorded in the right way and added in the right way, making sure that, you know, the Reddit post goes up and the email is sent out to your subscribers. Like, you do that, but I'm checking it's done. Because it's part of the process, right? So then they go on for later on in the day. And there's like, I don't, it's like a long list of tasks, right? Like, do the chapters all work and testing all of that stuff? They're making the YouTube video, right? That's a whole thing I don't do for any other show. And sometimes I'm only doing this stuff once a month, right? So
yeah,
if I'm not, like, all of my other shows, I'm doing them every week, but the process is the same for pretty much all of them. So I'm doing one a day on average, and that's pretty much the same process. But then there's this other process that occurs once every 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, which is very different and very complicated.
Yeah, that is prime you need a checklist territory.
Exactly.
It happens rarely. It's high stakes. It's not hard, but there's a lot of parts to it.
And this is the problem with, like, Cortex being my biggest show.
Mm-hmm.
Every time there's an issue, it's amplified over other shows, right? So, like, if you do a thing where you call a sponsor by the wrong name, which is what I did once, you get a lot of tweets about that, where if I did it on another show, it may have been, like, a quarter of those tweets, right? So there's just a lot on the line every time I'm posting an episode. So this was, funnily enough, a system I learned from you, right? Like, there is, like, you spoke about this on an episode in the past about, like, your kind of templates that you had going off in OmniFocus to, like, so this is what I did. Like, you have all of the different steps. So that all lives in things for me. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the layout options you can have with things are really nice. The way that it's all formatted, I like. I know you can, like, hack headers into Todoist, but I don't like the way it looks. I like the design of things when I open up my Cortex project and it's broken down into, like, audio, video, post-production, promotion, right? Like, I have these big headers and all the tasks go in there. And I also like is that then I have those 20 tasks not in my regular to-do manager messing everything up for those 2 days, right?
So it's a way that it allows you to focus on, I'm just doing Cortex now, you know, in this span of time from preparation to recording to post publication, checking up on things, and you don't want it. It's just easier to access it in this one separate place.
Yeah, because then it's not like, you know, because I spoke about this before, right? Like, I try and keep my to do's pretty lean. You know, like I said, like, if I have over 7 tasks that are due on a day, that's a terrible day for me. Like, it's too much, right? Because I try and keep things really focused. I don't just throw everything into my to do manager. So, the Cortex task list is like 25 tasks over 24 hours. My brain would explode, right? Like, if I saw all of that mixed in with everything else. Because it's not like for that 24-hour period from when, like, the edit begins to when it's posted or whatever. That's not the only thing I'm doing. I'm also doing all my other stuff. So I don't want those two things to cross over. So I use a completely different application just for that. And then I use Todoist for all of my other stuff. And then, like, some of the things that a lot of people would put into a to-do manager, I still put in Due, because Due is incredible for little tasks. I absolutely love it. That is an application, actually, that has gotten a lot better this year. So that's one. I'm going to give that one, Due. They added a feature for their notifications where you can pull down the notification and snooze it by a custom amount of time whenever you want by pressing these little buttons. And it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to reiterate. I do love Due. I love the ability to snooze notifications, and it is one of mine for the same kind of thing that you mentioned. And I think it's according to Screen Time, Due is very frequently like the second most sent notifications app, because I'm always employing it in scenarios where I know I don't want to do something. And it's like, do your job is to annoy me into doing this thing. Yeah. So it's like, it always makes me smile because do being the second most notified app is often a sign of like, you know what I didn't want to do? I didn't want to go to the gym. You know what I didn't want to do? I didn't want to start getting ready for bed. Right. And I just kept saying like, remind me in 5 minutes. Right. It's a great little app. And it makes me smile though, because it's like, it's a perfect nag, and that's exactly what I want it to be.
It's like take out the trash, right? That's where that stuff goes for me. And then you will just keep reminding me about it for 4 hours until I actually get up and do the thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So, yeah, that's kind of where I am with to-do apps right now, I think. You know, I've got my eye on OmniFocus still. I want to play around with it, but maybe you can tell me why I should. Because I assume that you're all Omni.
Yeah, aside from the minor things with Do, which again feels like a totally unrelated set of tasks, I have been all Omni, I mean, I guess since version 3, so I guess pretty much since the beginning of the year. And yeah, that is 100% where I am. Although, Mike, you know that you're poking me with mentioning that Todoist has added the option for floating time zones. you know what you're doing.
Yep.
Because it's like, even though Omni promised me that this was coming, and they said, oh, don't worry, 3.1, it'll totally be in there. 3.1 came, 3.1 passed, no floating time zones. It's still not there, and it kills me. But I have okay, here is going to be the world's worst hack that I figured out, because I have recently come back from a long trip to America, where again, this thing with OmniFocus was driving me crazy, because I was traveling between East Coast, West Coast, and Mountain Time, which every time I change time zones, it messes up all my little reminders in OmniFocus. But it dawned on me on the plane what I could do. Okay, now, Mike, OmniFocus has an option where you can export items as task paper. So you can just copy a bunch of projects, paste them into a text file, and it's in this format called task paper, which is like markdown for to-dos, right? It's a way to specify structure just using the character of texts. It's not like a real database. And I was flying over to America, and I had an epiphany on the plane. I thought, I know what I can do. This is going to be completely ridiculous, but I can do this. I went into OmniFocus on my laptop. I copied out my entire database in task paper format, pasted it into a note. Then on my computer, which was, of course, disconnected from the world because it's an airplane, I manually set the computer to the time zone I was about to arrive in. So OmniFocus thinks, oh, I'm on the East Coast now. And then I repasted back in my entire database from task paper format, and everything worked, right? Like, reminders that are supposed to go off at 8 o'clock, they went off at 8 o'clock on the East Coast, because task paper doesn't have any time zone information. So by doing this ridiculous copy-paste back and forth, I was able to strip all the time zone information out of and then back into my OmniFocus database. And I think I did that 5 times while traveling, every time I was going to cross a border. It's like, okay, on my computer, set it to the time zone where I'm going to go, and paste back in the database, and it worked. But of course, that is a ridiculous workaround, but I mention it here.
One of the worst ideas I've ever heard.
I mention it here in case there is anybody else who uses OmniFocus who travels who this infuriates.
I implore people not to do this.
Okay, well, listen, I will mention, there's going to be one problem. If you have attachments that are images, those will not transfer either. Now, fortunately for me, I don't have anything like that in my OmniFocus database. So look, I am not like recommending this. I'm simply saying if you are exactly me, this is a great solution to what is the most longstanding and ridiculous limitation of OmniFocus. So I'm just throwing it out there, people. You can get around it instead of manually readjusting the time on 50 items.
So I will say, you've reminded me again why I will not move to OmniFocus in the near future. Because every time when I get off a plane and I open Todoist and it says, hey, would you like to change the time zone to this one? I thank my lucky stars that I use an application that understands time zones.
Yeah, and all, like, all joking aside, while I do love OmniFocus, I am not in this moment seriously suggesting, oh, you should give OmniFocus a try, because I really do think if you're someone who travels and has the kinds of reminders that we do, it's just a total deal breaker if you have a lot of them. Like, it's just too frustrating. So I'm not seriously suggesting that you try it. I'm just going to keep waiting until OmniFocus fixes this and then try to bully you into switching.
Because the fact that I can now set, like, if I ever, because what I would do, right, I have all my tasks, they just float, and then when I get to a place, I will change anything that I need to be in, like, the home time zone back manually, right?
Right.
But now, I can, if I ever have a task, it's very rare I have these tasks, but now I can just, when I initially set it up in Todoist, fix it to this time zone.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want, and that's really nice. Like, that's... Yeah. It's really good that they've implemented that so that it doesn't even have to, or like you can be more confident that you have set this task in explicitly the way you want it to be, which is, you know, what a deadline should be. But all of that aside, that one grinding issue, I do really love OmniFocus. And I mean, I've mentioned this before, but the thing that's the really big deal for me is the fact that you can tag your tasks and you can give them an arbitrary number of tags. And so, like, if I'm looking at my OmniFocus right now, why does this matter? Why do tags matter? For me, it amplifies what is the strongest point of OmniFocus that no other task manager does as well, which is I only want to see exactly what I can work on now. And it drives me nuts when task managers show you all of the things that you can theoretically do today, right? Or stuff that has to happen later in the day, but you can't actually start now. Like, maybe it's just me, but I'm very sensitive to that kind of thing, and it just breaks my brain. It's very frustrating to see actions that I cannot act upon. And by using tags, you can specifically exclude items from a view that you're looking at. And so here's how my day goes in theory. I have three what are called perspectives in OmniFocus, which are ways of looking at your tasks. And the top one I call, like, executor, which was very funny when we did our last book club for me, because he's talking about being, like, the executor of your own life. And I have used this word as, like, my top-level perspective for a long time. An executor, what I want it to show me are, here are the things that are the most important things, but they're not necessarily urgent tasks. But if I'm hitting stuff out of the park, this is what I should work on. So these are, like, no surprise, basic items like, go into the office and spend some time writing. Go to the library. Spend some time following up research questions that you had from yourself during the writing session. Go to the gym after you've done these things, right? These are, like, basic tasks. But what I want to be able to see is, like, I want to open up my task manager and I don't want to be flooded with everything else from the day. I just want, like, here are the big ones. And so it's great that in OmniFocus, no matter where those items are, like anywhere else in the system, I can tag anything executor and it will show up, like, in this top level thing. Mm-hmm. And then I can go through, like, the rest of the day working through more specific ones. So I have a thing called soon, right, which is just what it sounds like. It's just going to show me anything that has a due date that's available and anything that's flagged. So it's like, okay, I should work on those. And then I have another one which just shows me everything that's available in the whole system for me to work on. And, like, I just love that I can get as picky as I want to get with these perspectives, because you can just set up any arbitrary number of rules that can act on tags, and it's functionally a Turing complete system. Like, it can be anything that you want. And I'll show you now, and you can put this in the show notes. The one that I think looks the funniest for me is the perspective of what do I want to see on my watch. And I'm just going to show you this so you can get a sense of, like, how complicated things can be. So I've just sent you, like, a screenshot of a perspective that I call widget, which is, what do I want to see on my watch and what do I want to see on the widget screen on my phone?
Okay. And why widget? Like, just so I can understand the context of what I'm seeing. Like, what does that word mean to you?
The word widget means to me the widget screen on the iPhone. That's where it originally started. Right. Okay. And then I just added it to the watch. Right. So the idea was like, what do I want to see if I'm looking at the widget screen of my phone?
So that feels like high level, urgent, that type of dealio, right? So yeah, you've got that like available, due soon.
So here's the interesting thing is the watch one, I theoretically want that watch to always show me exactly what I want to see at any point in time. And so that means a pretty complicated array of things. Like in the morning, I want to see the executor items on the watch, and I don't want to see something that's due later in the afternoon. And so I've built up over time these rules that every time I see something on the watch that I feel like, oh, I don't want to see that at this moment, is there some way I can express this in terms of a if-then rule based on tags? Then I add it.
I'm looking at this now. Like, this is a very complicated set of rules.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to show you, and you can put it in the show notes so that people can see the kind of thing that you can do. I'm not expecting that it makes sense to look at it, but it's how you can build up a thing over time. Like, I didn't sit down and write that one day, and it continues off the page. Like, it goes for a while.
Yeah, I kind of imagined that was the case.
Yeah. So, like, just so people can see, here is what my soon one is, which is much more, like, a much more understandable set of rules.
Yeah, okay.
But these two things are, for me, the reason I love OmniFocus and the thing that just no other app does as well. And it's why I will tolerate exporting and re-importing the entire database into and out of TaskPaper format, right? Is because I'm able to keep all the rest of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much like a form of programming, right?
Yeah, it is funny because the only other app I've ever seen that did anything like this was my beloved Remember the Milk back in the day. But that one really had you learn a little tiny Excel programming language in order to make it operate. But that's also why I love that one, because you could do the same kind of thing. And yeah, this is like Excel-y in the way that it works in setting up these rules. And I hope they keep adding to the rule set over time, but it's really great. And it has just made a huge difference for me with task managers and just having a place where I feel like, okay, I'm just here. No other app is going to come close to this. So I'm going to stick with OmniFocus, and I don't have to, you know, as in the earlier days of the show, be flipping back and forth between things or always feel kind of unsettled. And yeah, so I have a very happy home with my task manager now.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's funny compared to last year. On last year's episode, you weren't using any.
Yeah, that's right. What I'd gone over to paper briefly, or I'd thrown up my hands in frustration. I don't remember.
Just not at that point. It was just nothing. Like, there was just nothing, and I couldn't conceive of it.
I remember. I remember that time of life. Right. I remember that now. That was a void where I was just like, I'm not doing anything. I forgot about that.
I wanted to touch on time tracking to give an update on the time tracking app that I've been using, because I'm not kidding, I think it's an almost daily occurrence now that people are asking me, like, does the time tracking app that you spoke about that's in beta exist yet? The answer is no, it's still being worked on. The developer's still putting a lot of time into it, a lot of features into it, and they're still like nailing down the branding of it. I don't know the timeline, but it is being developed. And what I'll say is, you can rest assured that when this application comes out, I will talk about it on the show to let everyone know that it's available. So this is basically a third-party app to integrate with Toggle, which is the only app that I use now to manage my time tracking. It has great Siri shortcuts support if you want to do that, but I just like that I can get everything set up. It remembers a lot of my preferences, and it's just a really nice design. But my understanding is there's still quite a bit of work to go for the developer to be happy and get everything that they want to put in the app. But it's really great, and it will be available at some point.
Yeah, I mean, just to quickly follow that up, I'm still using Toggle. I'm still using a derivation of Vitici's Toggle shortcuts that he made available on his website, taking those and customizing them for my own needs. So that's still what I'm using for time tracking. Although, just as a point of interest, we may retouch upon this when the yearly themes come up. But for the past 5 weeks that I've been traveling, I made a decision not to do any time tracking during that period of time.
Huh, okay.
So I'm on a temporary hiatus from time tracking. But Toggle is still what I think is the best tool. And shortcuts, I think, is a pretty good way to interface with it.
Yep.
And I did take a look. Their initial shortcut support was pretty terrible, but it looks like they have now properly integrated with shortcuts. So I will probably redo my Vitici shortcuts at some point.
The official Toggle app's Siri shortcut support has gotten better over time, but the official Toggle app is still not very good.
Yeah, no one should use the app directly. My God, like don't look directly at it. You have to use something else, right? It's like the face of Medusa and you need a shield called shortcuts, you know, in order to actually interact with the thing. I mean, Toggle, you're great, but your app is not.
And I'll give you money forever, right? Like, give you money, you just keep being a service of an API, and I can use other services and tools with it. That's awesome. So you remember when I was talking earlier about applications that I use that I'm dissatisfied with?
Yes.
Calendaring is probably the biggest one.
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to agree with you there.
I am, and have been for many years, a devout Fantastical user. Mm-hmm. Fantastical, in my opinion, is still the best calendar application that you can get today. Unless you use one of the new iPads, where it is a design disaster.
Yes.
They have not updated it, and there is like some kind of visual bug where sometimes half of one month and half of the other month just overlay on each other.
I've seen that. I've seen that bug.
Let alone the fact that their iPad app has never really been that great in full screen anyway. There's a lot of wasted space. But I really feel like at this point, like I'm stuck into Fantastical because of the natural language input. Like, I really understand, like, without even thinking, how to format an event in Fantastical. And that kind of quick entry is really keeping me locked in. The iPhone app is still very good. Like, I'm still very happy with the iPhone app. Like, you know, I do wish that there was more stuff just going into it. I'm frustrated that I'm having to make the same feature request, which is that I made in last year's episode, which is that the Mac app has a thing called calendar sets, where you can set up different sets of calendars so you don't have to see them all at the same time. The iPhone app still doesn't have that, and I don't know why. Like, it's the same developer. They made this feature on one platform. I don't know why they didn't put it on the other one. Because they made a big song and dance of it on the Mac. It's like, this is this great feature we've created, which is a great feature, but it's not on the iOS version. So it doesn't really feel like a lot is going into Fantastical on the iPhone. But like the iPads have been out for about 6 weeks at this point, and the app has visual bugs as well as not being fully optimized. And I'm a little bit perplexed as to why they haven't done anything about it from a developer that in the past seems to have been very on top of things. So this is why I'm a bit like, you know, this was when I was like thinking yesterday, like in like kind of mulling the episode over in my brain. This was one of the things that really stuck out to me was my calendaring system, where I kind of feel like it's not where I want it to be right now.
Yeah. And Fantastical is also right in my crosshairs of an app that should be a subscription.
Yeah, and we're like, please let me.
Yeah, please let me subscribe to your app so that it can be continually updated. Because I agree, Fantastical is a great app, and the calendar sets is the best feature of it. I've never gotten into using the natural language processing part of it, so I can't speak to that. But yeah, like I use Fantastical, and I'm very aware that on the phone and on the iPad, it doesn't have the calendar sets. Now, it's not a huge deal for me, because the thing that I've done for many years now is using two calendars. I use Apple's calendar, which by default just has all of my calendars turned on, which is a lot. I mean, I think I have something like 20, 25 calendars. So when I want to see everything, I just open up Apple Calendar. And then Fantastical, I set into what I think of as planning mode. So just before we started officially recording the show, Mike and I were talking about when are we going to try to record the next episodes of Cortex. And that's when I open up Fantastical, which I always leave in this planning mode, which is show me the calendars that are going to affect anything where I'm trying to set up a meeting with someone or I'm trying to do a podcast
recording.
It's going
to show you your available time.
Yeah, it's or not even available time. It shows me just a bunch of things that are useful to know. Like one of the calendars, which I'm pretty sure I first heard about this idea from Merlin Mann, is landscape, which is things that don't affect me in any way, but it's useful to know. And so something I'll put in landscape is there are conferences that happen throughout the year. I can't attend all of those conferences, but it's often useful to know that the conference is happening on these dates because it means that, other people might be less available during that time. Right. So it's like, okay, landscape is one of those calendars. Or like someone is visiting, they haven't locked down all my time, but it's good to know that like that person is going to be in the city during these spans of time. So, but that's how I use these two things, is switching back and forth between like calendars and Fantastical, is those two modes. But it does feel like I should just be able to do this solely in Fantastical, but they just don't have that option to switch back and forth on the phone or on iOS. So that's why I end up using the two of them. And then I just recreate that behavior on the computer, even though it's totally unnecessary there. But it's just out of habit that I use these two calendars for these two things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm looking at it now, right? Fantastical receives regular updates, but it kind of just feels like the things that I want, they're not doing.
I feel like it hasn't changed in 5 years. Like, from my perspective, it seems like it's exactly this. Like, it still gives me that same frustrating tutorial every time I install it on a new device, where it's like, pull down up here, the way down, push back up, right? It's like, God damn it, Fantastical.
It's like the iPad app really does need some general work. I think it could be rethought to be more kind of visually responsible. And, you know, like some of the features they've added, like they have a customizable notification thing, like Duo. I don't use that. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't use that. I don't ever snooze a calendar event, right? Like, that's what it's all about. It's like, but I never, this is the thing I never do.
Yeah, I can't even conceive of how that, like, my concept of what a calendar event is. Yeah, it's like, what?
Like,
I don't understand.
For people that use calendars as calendars as to-do systems, which just...
And,
I can't abide
not even
by.
Jason Snell does that anymore, right? He's
no,
left that.
He saw the light.
So nobody does that.
So if I'm thinking about why do I feel like kind of my application use or like my excitement in applications has calmed down this year, maybe one of those reasons is I'm not trying new email apps anymore.
The wheel.
Two of the big email apps have been purchased recently. There was another one, I think, that just got bought. So a lot of the third-party apps are going away. But now I am pretty much stuck in Spark, which is the app by Readle. I don't really like the application very much. That hasn't changed. I find their design choices to be peculiar in places, and... It's just not an application that I find like really meets with what I think of as a iOS app. It also feels very cross-platformy, even though it's not, which is kind of strange, right? It's like it's on Apple platforms only, but yet it feels like Todoist does, where it's just like, I don't understand the design that you're creating here. Like, it just doesn't gel with me. Mm. But their service, their team's service, is very good. It has changed the way I deal with email. Like, I could never move email app now unless there is a shared team service built into it.
Oh, interesting.
Being able to... So, like, here's the thing, right? Email comes in, and it's for something that our sales manager will deal with instead of me, right? But it comes to me. They've sent it to me, but I'm not going to take care of it. It's for her. So I can just assign the email to her since she can deal with it. Now, yes, I could forward the email to her, right? If I was using a regular email.
But it's not
the
same.
Yeah. It's not the same. Because let me tell you what happens. Email comes in and it's like a company that we don't work with that wants more information about our advertising. So I will assign it to our sales manager, and then she will talk to them, right? That's kind of the typical flow of where this sort of stuff goes now. But when I assign it to her, we both have it available to us. We can have a conversation in line with the email without the recipient seeing it. And then if we want to do this, it's possible for us both to see every email sent and received in that chain together, and we can continue talking about it as the emails are going backwards and forwards. Like, that method of inline conversation is so good, because this enables us to have multiple streams of conversation in different silos, which is something we've spoken about a bunch on this show. Siloing conversation is very good, right? It's how, like, me and Gray have simultaneous multiple conversations, right, without getting things mixed up, because we're having a chat in iMessage and business conversation in Slack, right? And, like, sometimes at the exact same time. And this is how I work with our sales manager now, right? Like, we're talking about one thing in Slack, and then we're talking about another thing in email. And then, like, in 2 weeks' time, that email is going to pop back up in my inbox, and she's going to say, this is all done now, right? And, like, without her having to, like, open Slack, be like, do you remember when I was talking about that thing? And da, 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 right? Like, that does, none of that's needed, because everything's in line and it's all siloed. So I love their Teams feature so much that I'm completely stuck in it, no matter, like, their app is fine, right? But one of my favorite things about email apps is there was always a new amazing one with this beautiful design that did all this wicked and wonderful stuff, and I'm just not trying them anymore because the service is too important, and that's why I'm business boring Mike, right?
Yeah, I mean, so my email app over the last year has been, I don't do email. Like, I've for all intents and purposes just walked away from email.
Did you say my email app is I don't do email?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Can I download that? Where do you get that one?
Well, I mean, you get that one by sitting down and thinking about a cost-benefit analysis and understanding that there will be costs, but the benefit is you don't do email.
Is anybody checking these email inboxes?
Well, okay, so here's the bigger picture, right? That the important thing that's in email for me, I have moved almost everything into either my own company Slack or it exists in the Slacks of others. Right. So, like, Mike, you don't email me. You send me a message on your Slack and I get it and I respond. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think I'm a member of 5 or 6 Slacks now. And that Slack has ended up capturing, let's say, 95% of all of the valuable communication that used to exist in email over the past few years. And it's had this feedback loop where over time it has made my email less valuable to check, which then makes me want to check it less. And then when I go in there, it's like, oh, there's just a mountain of spam and automated notifications from things. And so I'm going to say my email use is something like once every couple of weeks, I open it up and kind of skim over it to see if there's any disaster that's in there. And the answer is almost never. Nobody else is checking my personal email accounts, but I have redirected essentially everything that's important to Slack.
I.e. the people, not the messages, you're saying, right? You've redirected the people to Slack. It's like there's not, the email's not getting sent to Slack.
Yes. Yeah. To be clear, I always forget that that's a thing that you can do, that you can have emails sent to Slack, which seems like an Ouroboros eating its own tail. I don't understand why people would do that. I mean, I kind of do, but it's just, that's crazy to me in my workflow. So I don't do that. But there is one thing that there's a downside of this, because I've really doubled down on Slack in the past year in a way that I would not have expected. But this also means that I used to use Slack as like an instant message conversation. So it was only just direct messages between people. But as the number of projects has kind of multiplied, I've ended up being like, oh, this is what Channels is for. So let's make Channels for the individual projects and talk about things in there. But man, one thing email has, which as far as I can tell, there's no way to mimic in Slack, is there's no way to mark like, okay, this conversation is done now. And I've cleared this. Like, it's one thing I really miss from email is the concept of, I am going to archive this thread and it is going to go away because it is done. Okay, how do you think you can do that in Slack? Because Slack always shows you all of your threads. But here's the kicker. There's a thing that lets you clear a thread, but if anyone ever replies, you will never know because you have been taken off that as like getting replies.
As an admin, you can just close them.
Okay, explain.
If you're setting them up as channels, right?
Oh, no. Okay, I'm saying like, I'm involved in a lot of conversations across a lot of channels across a bunch of Slacks.
Yeah.
And the thing that I would love is, you know, like it's like the old dream, inbox zero. Right? I have turned around everything that has come into my email inbox, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, in Slack, there's no equivalent to that. And I feel like I've crossed some threshold where it's a real problem now where I can end up losing something in Slack, where there's a thread that someone's waiting for me to reply to something about. And because I have 20 threads that I'm a part of, it just gets shunted down the chain really far. And it's hard to know at what point I'm done with these threads. So that like that's the problem that I have with Slack, is this inability to know when is it cleared. There's no place I can look and say, I have dealt with all of the things that people require from me in Slack.
Because, and like the all unreads and all threads things are not helping you there?
Well, so like when you go to all threads, it's essentially a reverse chronological list of all of the threads that you're involved in.
Mm-hmm.
But that can mean it's showing you things that are done, but below them might be things that are undone. Right? There's no way to like mark this state of this thing is done, this thing is not done, and don't show me the things that are done. So that is a frustration that I have with Slack. I'd be very curious to know if people have solutions to this. I've tried things like starring threads, but that ends up being like a complication where you lose track of the state of the stars. It's like it's not as clear as an email archive. And I only bring this up because I found myself on occasion thinking, maybe I should go back to email. So I know that these things, and it's like, no, don't do that. That's a terrible idea. There's a reason that you went to Slack in the first place. But it has crossed my mind that like I'm frustrated by the lack of clarity of clearedness or clarity of finishedness with Slack. Even though Slack has overall been great and I really like it as a tool, that is a frustration that, for me anyway, once past a certain volume of communication on Slack has become a real problem for me.
Because I'm assuming that you're, you know, because it will show you what you have unread in the sidebar, but you don't want to check everything.
Well, no. Well, here's the problem with the unread status. It's just like, it's the same problem with iMessage. There's no clear way to be like, oh, I've looked at this thing, but I can't do anything about it now, and I want to get it later. And it's like, there's this dumb Slack bot thing to remind you later, but that's not the same thing as like clear.
You can mark it as unread again.
Yeah, I know. I know you can do that, but I often come to a situation where it's like, you have 14 unread threads. And then I click on the button to see them, and it instantly marks all of them as read. And it's like, oh, okay, it's not really what I wanted to do.
Yeah, see, that's ruined everything. Yeah, because now what was I marking? Because now I've lost everything. Yeah, I get you.
I've lost everything.
That's why I never use the all unreads thing, because it's just like, well, that's not what I wanted to do, right? Was just mark everything as read when I haven't actually read it all. Like, that's not helpful.
Yeah, I guess maybe what it is that all unread thing seems like a pseudo inbox, which might be why I'm frustrated with it. It's like an inbox that doesn't act the way you expect an inbox to act.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should try to get out of the habit of using that thing, but...
Oh, that's... I can't believe you use it. That's terrible. I hate it. It's really, I think, like, I wished I could disable it. Like, it just gets in my way. I never want all unreads because it's like... That's not how I look at Slack. Like, everything's compartmentalized. You know, just throw it all together. That's not helpful.
Yeah, whereas I feel like I want to hit that all on red thing and then just boom, 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 clear everything as fast as I can and then get out of there.
Yeah.
But it ends up causing me more problems.
Yeah. It'd be easier if things disappeared from the list, right?
Right, but they don't. That's the issue. Is everything stays in there forever. And all on red means everything that you've ever interacted with forever. Like, you can scroll back for thousands of messages in all on red. It's like, God damn it. But anyway, that's my communications for any and everything that's remotely business related is all entirely Slack and email. Like, I live in a world without email, basically, is where I am at the moment. I'm off the wheel, I guess. There's one thing that you haven't touched on, Mike, which I want to mention, which is automation tools.
Ah, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, we mentioned Shortcuts briefly. Shortcuts would be my app of the year, obviously.
Sure.
Although I would not want you to spoil the upgradees and make any remark on that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I just want to have a quick mention for Keyboard Maestro, which I was bullied into by Rosemary Orchard at WWDC. And I have barely scratched the surface with this, but I love it. Like, it's automation for the Mac. And to give you an idea of, like, I'm using it very, very simply, but I'll tell you two things that I've done with it, which I really love. So one of the things is, on my laptop, Keyboard Maestro can look for certain triggers. And I've set up an away from home trigger. So if I disconnect from my home Wi-Fi, Keyboard Maestro will automatically launch two power saving apps on my laptop. One which is called Turbo Boost Pro, which shuts down, it's not overclocking, but like the turbo mode on your computer, which makes a huge difference for battery life. And another one called Endurance, which once you hit 50% battery life on your laptop, will like really start flipping switches to conserve battery life. And then when I reconnect to the home Wi-Fi, it quits those two apps. So I just, this is the kind of thing that I love.
I don't think Keyboard Maestro is a good name for this application anymore.
No, I completely agree. And I think it's one of the reasons why for years I just didn't, I always thought it was a kind of Quicksilver competitor.
Well, it was
my thought.
I think
is that where it started?
Like, it was just a keyboard like replacement thing, like it, where you could just do a bunch of stuff with your keyboard. They should just call it Maestro. Like, I don't.
Yes, Maestro would be a better name. Yes, it would be.
Keyboard Maestro, people, come on! Like, because I've never used this application because it's like, I don't want to use keyboard shortcuts all the time. Like, I didn't even know you could do stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's a little thing that I love, and. There's another one, which it took me a while to get it to work exactly the way I want, but now saves me so much time. I simply call it startup. So when the computer reboots, Keyboard Maestro gets my computer into what I think of as the starting position. And so I'm sure everyone's familiar with the idea that you can have apps automatically launch when you start your computer. Mm-hmm. But I want them to automatically launch and then be in particular places. So when my computer starts up, some of the things that happen, it's like, okay, Keyboard Maestro will launch Fantastical, which is in planning mode for me, but it will also maximize Fantastical to then be its own space on the computer, which is exactly what I always want. It will launch OmniFocus, but now here's the thing. I always want two windows for OmniFocus. I want one little window in the top left, which just shows the executor perspective in a tiny little corner. And I want another big window, which opens up that shows me my all project lists in case I need to mess around with something. And Keyboard Maestro can do that. It opens OmniFocus, it makes a new window, it puts it into the executor perspective, it smushes it up in the corner, it opens a second window, it switches it over to projects, then it makes projects full screen. Like, it's great!
Right, because even though the Mac can relaunch stuff for you, it maybe can't do all of those little independent parts, right?
Yeah, it can't remember how are you fiddly about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been meaning to do this for like a podcast recording setup as well, which is there's always a way I want the computer to be when I'm recording a podcast. This is like an environment setup. So I have made one for writing, which is if I'm writing on the computer, here's what you need to do. Like I press a button, like it closes down everything except the apps that I want open. Like it opens them up, it puts them in the right spots, and it's all set. Like the power of this is crazy, and I have barely scratched the surface with what it can do. And I really have to say, it's an app that I'd heard about for years and had always vaguely avoided. And I was a fool to have avoided it. Like what it can do is incredible. So I just wanted to mention that in the automation category is something that is brand new and has a lot of potential for me.
What are you using for writing these days?
All right, this is the second big switch of the year.
Oh.
Which is, oh, are you surprised, Mike?
I don't know.
I have for years used Ulysses, but this year I decided to try another app that I have also been avoiding for years, which is Scrivener.
Oh, okay.
Do you know of Scrivener, Mike?
Yeah, I know of Scrivener. Everyone knows of Scrivener. It's been around forever. Like if you've been focusing on Mac stuff for any amount of time, like you will have come across Scrivener.
Yeah, Scrivener is it has been around for a really long time. It's also cross-platform, so it works on Windows as well, which surprises me because it doesn't feel like a cross-platform app at all. But I would say that Scrivener is like the complete opposite of the types of apps that I have been using low these many years. So I have been, for years and years, using Markdown text editors like Ulysses, where if you want to write something in bold, you put little asterisks on either side of it, and that tells the computer, oh, this word is supposed to be bold. But you don't select a word and do a keyboard command to like stylize it as bold.
Rich text versus Markdown, right?
It's rich text versus Markdown, or like in the really old days, LaTeX is the same idea. You're typing up what the formatting should be. You're not visually seeing what the formatting is. Now, I don't know if I'm going to stick with Scrivener because constitutionally, I greatly prefer marking up text with markers that I can see as opposed to picking text to be stylized. But I do have to say that Scrivener is really interesting to me because I've gone all in on styles. And what this allows me to do in a way that I could never quite get to work with Ulysses or any other Markdown text editor is to say, mark a passage as this is copy-pasted from a book, like this is reference material, right? This passage is a note to myself in this document. Mm. This paragraph is an actual paragraph of the script. And by doing that, it allows me to export different versions of the script. So I can export to myself a version of the script that has just the parts that are actually going to be in the script.
So yes. You can not only visually see it, right? So like it's nice because when you're going through your document and looking at it, you can like pick out all of the notes and maybe there's parts you need to add so you can visually see what's left. But then also when it's done, you don't have to delete all that stuff. You can just export the thing you need to read. That's cool.
That's exactly right, yeah. So if for whatever reason, like I want to leave a note that's a citation in some certain point, it can just leave it there and mark it as like, don't export this part of it. It also means what I have done is I can quickly send out versions to experts to be like, hey, can you look over this? And it cuts out 90% of the like the garbage that I would have to manually remove otherwise. And then on the other side, it allows me to export a version to myself that does have my own notes in it, which then I'll, you know, mark up in something like GoodNotes, right? Where I want to see my notes to myself. And I want to see the part that's actually the script, but I don't need to see all the research material now because I'm doing a particular kind of draft. So it's very interesting. Like Scrivener is way, way overkill for me. Like I don't need 90% of what it does because, I mean, this is, you can write entire really heavy research thing. Like it has a whole ability to act as a kind of Evernote replacement and like, It can do so very much, but I'm only using this very limited part of it. But so far this year, I wrote the Statue of Liberty script in it, and I wrote the Federal Land script in it, and I'm working on the next two videos I'm doing in Scrivener. So like, this has been an interesting trial, and it's so far so good. I like it. I like it a lot. It's worth taking a look at if you do writing of any kind.
It's interesting to me because a complaint that you had about Ulysses is that Ulysses really tries to force you to think that you're a novelist, right? Like that it does a bunch of stuff where it's like, it's clearly the application wants to be used by people writing books. Scrivener is even more like that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Scrivener is its intended audience is a novelist or someone writing a nonfiction historical book, right? With a ton of notes. One thing that is really great about Scrivener on the Mac is, good God, do they have settings? They have settings for everything. And that allows me to go in and turn off a ton of the stuff that I just don't want to see.
Sure.
So that is helpful. I think if the app forced me to see a bunch of, here's a way that you can look at your novel in terms of index cards along with the character profile for each. Like, I don't need any of this. I never want to see it. I don't want to know that it's there.
They are legit features, by the way. Like, you can look at your book as if it's index cards on a corkboard. It's very detailed and involved.
Yeah, it really is. You can do a lot of stuff with it. And what was it? Several episodes ago when I was complaining about Apple Watch faces, I was learning how to use Scrivener at that point in time. And I had imported all the screenshots of my Apple Watches into Scrivener just because their ability to rearrange images in a research project is like, oh, actually, this is a great tool for this to like visually line up a bunch of things, like these things are similar, group all of those things together, and also be able to make notes on the individual ones. Like, it's an incredibly powerful tool. Now, if anything drives me away from it, it will be that it's too powerful, and I still really don't like styles. I don't fundamentally like the idea that there's some part of the writing that I can't see, which is the invisible computer knowledge of what these sections are. I wish there was a way I could do it using characters like you can in Markdown, but I'm trying this trade-off, and so far it's been very interesting. And I'm kind of curious to know whether future me ends up sticking with it, you know, when we do State of the Apps next year, or not. Right now I don't know which way it is, but it's very promising, and I really think if you do writing, you should check it out. I avoided it pointlessly for many years.
So considering it has all of these powerful like research tools, I'm sure you're just going to switch from Evernote, right?
God damn it, Mike. So on the Apple App Store, they had a little thing one day, which was like, go look up the oldest app that's on your phone. I thought, oh yeah, let me go take a look at what that is. And I went into my purchase history. I scrolled all the way down to the bottom. And the first app that I ever bought on my iPhone was an A to Z London map guide, which is hilarious because, of course, it's like, oh, right. I didn't actually have a phone. I had an iPod and I needed to have offline access to maps in London, which is hilarious now. Number two was Remember the Milk.
Yep.
And number three was Evernote.
It was my sixth.
Yeah, Evernote was my third oldest app on the phone and is now officially the oldest app on my phone that I still use that I still find the most frustrating.
I have some real crap in this list. My gosh, down at the bottom.
Oh yeah, the early stuff is real garbage. Like, yeah. I had a ton of like throwaway games and a bunch of stuff.
A rotary dialer app. Why do I have that? Why did I get that?
Look, in the early days, we didn't even know what we could do with the phone. So we were just downloading whatever, right? You give yourself a pass. But I thought my first three were quite funny. I was like, oh, A to Z maps. Like, God, I remember having one of you in my backpack in, you know, pre-phone days of having to look at it.
For some reason, my first was iTunes Remote.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
I don't know, the Facebook app, an AIM app, Net News Wire, which is an RSS reading app, Shazam, and then Evernote. Why did I care so much about Shazam?
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, Mike. But like, I'm willing to bet that for a lot of people, Evernote is in like the first 10. Like, it's got to be.
Look, we rag on it a lot because it is bad now by and large. But back when it was, when it began, like, it was incredible. Like, what you could do in Evernote compared to what you could do in literally any other note-taking application, right?
Yeah, and especially considering that Apple Notes was not good.
Garbage.
Right, at this, right, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And Evernote was astounding compared to it. I think my, like, one of my frustrations with Evernote is, sort of like you were saying with the apps, is like they're constantly doing stuff, but it's none of the stuff that I care about. And that always feels frustrating. And it's like, as the joke goes, like, they're busy selling socks and I want Markdown support in my notes, right? And it's like, well, nope, tough nookies. I do want to give Evernote a little bit of a break this year because, like I was saying last episode, finding this new place in my, this new again place in my life for the iPad as like research assistant, I've realized that Evernote is much more tolerable for me if I'm using it entirely as an iPad tool. That I'm using, like, I'm collecting stuff all over the place and throwing it into Evernote, but I'm reading through documents and reviewing notes on the iPad, and it makes it easier to deal with that. So Evernote still has some killer features that nobody else does. I spent some time investigating when I was looking around at Scrivener of some of the alternatives, and it was still the same deal breakers. Nobody does image OCR the same way Evernote does, which is a huge deal for me. And yeah, I would say it's tolerable. And in particular, Evernote did add one thing finally that made me very happy, which is a dark mode, which makes a huge difference to me.
That's really great.
It really does.
Like, I know that last time we spoke about them, we were like poking fun at their design and stuff, but like, it, and I still stand by a lot of that nonsense, but it does seem like that they're trying to get their house in order a little bit. Like, it does feel like they're trying to like turn their ship a bit and try and focus more, right? Because they put all their prices up, and I mean, and that's a key kind of way. Like, they want to double down on some stuff. Mm-hmm. But a company as large and with a history like they've had, it's going to take them a long time if they do anything.
Yeah. So, like, I take the dark mode as, a goodwill gesture.
Yeah, and sure.
There are a bunch of weird problems that I've run into with Evernote that just go away if I never open it on the Mac, and I just use it as an iPad-only tool. And so that's why, like, Evernote, you've been with me for however long. You're probably going to be with me until the last bitter day, and at least you're tolerable now. That's my feeling with Evernote.
I would love if, like, during the course of our show, we go from both, like, using Evernote a lot to hating it to loving it again. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
That would be great. Yeah, there's nothing I want more than to really love Evernote. Like, there is maybe no app that I feel that strongly about.
I feel like a bit of an idiot at the moment.
Mm.
Because, all right, I'm working on a new project that we're going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I need an application that can store a bunch of media types, including text.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been looking around, and there's an app called Keep It that I've been looking at, and there's an app called Agenda that I've been looking at, and nothing's really worked. Maybe it's Evernote. I think it might be Evernote.
You know, they also let you share notebooks with people, which for that project might be useful as well. So just saying.
Holy crap. Evernote, I'm coming back to you, baby. We're going to be friends again. It could be Evernote. Wow, I can't believe that. All right, well, I'm just looking at their website and it's just like, oh yeah, that's what you do. Wow, Evernote, look at you. I'm installing you again.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think about Evernote, Mike.
Oh, I can't believe we're doing this. What is going on? 2019, it's all going crazy. That's a real surprise.
That is a real surprise.
I was not expecting to go there today. Huh. All right. Well, I'm going to give Evernote another go, I guess.
I really look forward to your feedback on that. That's going to be great. Look, Evercore, it's part of the show.
I guess so.
We even got show artwork for it.
We sure do. We sure do.
Some of my favorite show artwork.
So we spoke about all the important business stuff. Should we do a lightning round of some of the other things that we want to throw out there?
Yeah, all right. Let's do a quick lightning round because I've got a bunch of things that I don't have a lot to say about, but I just want to mention as apps I like. Ka-choom.
Oh.
I don't know. Was that lightning? No, that wasn't lightning
yes.
at all. Yes.
No, that was lightning. Okay. As the man who listens to thunder sounds and lightning. But anyway, you keep going.
Okay. I'll do the quick first lightning round. Anki, the cross-platform flashcard memorization app that I have used for years and years.
It always pops up, this one.
I always want to mention it because it's great. If you are, like, I always recommended it to my students to use. It's not exactly user-friendly, partly because of how old it is, but man, is it powerful. Like, it is really powerful.
Okay.
And if you need to know anything, I recommend you just throw a bunch of flashcards into it and use it to memorize information. Like, my wife recently was using it for her citizenship application or citizenship tests, like to get all that information in her head.
Then I can only assume that it was the same thing that my wife used, because they were sharing some kind of cards together.
Like,
so, okay.
Yeah. You can share a card, like you can give someone else the deck that you're using, and I just have a bunch of random stuff in there, and for any project where I feel like I need to learn something, like I throw keyboard shortcuts in there all the time. That's one of the things I like for it, is every time I'm using an app and I feel like I use a shortcut a bunch, I should just memorize it instead of looking it up each time. I'm not in school, obviously, but there are still things that you need to have memorized in life, and Anki is the best for that. So I really like it. I highly recommend it. If you are a student, you are crazy to go be in school and not be using it.
I'm gonna throw Discord into this.
Ooh, Discord.
Discord is a very powerful application. It's Slack for gamers, basically. Yeah. And it has just like a few features to it that I really like. So I'm a member of a couple of Discords. Yeah, dark mode is one of them. I'm a member of a couple of Discords, but I mostly like lurk in them. Like, I don't really contribute too much. I don't really spend a lot of time in there. But for the game streams that me and Tiff have been doing for playing for fun, it's so useful. Like, that some of the features they have of, like, you know, you can set up a voice channel which is just always open for people to join and leave, right? Like, it's just so useful for gaming. Their video and screen sharing stuff is so good. The way they think about streaming, you know, like if you have a streaming application open, it warns you, like, hey, you've got a streaming app open. Like, we're restricting the view of some stuff unless you tell us otherwise. Like, it is just a very focused application that I enjoy. It is not a Slack replacement. I mean, a lot of people think of it to be a Slack replacement. It's not a Slack replacement for what Slack is supposed to be used for, but it's it's a Slack replacement for what a lot of people use Slack for. You follow me? Like,
yeah,
Slack is a business tool, right?
Yeah.
But people use it for social groups, and Discord is maybe a better social groups application.
Yeah, for sure. And it is also the chat method for my very active YouTube gaming channel. Like, it's perfect for that. Yeah.
Yep.
I really like Discord. And I like visually the way it looks much better than Slack. Like, I wish Slack looked more like Discord, especially because of that dark mode, which is great.
Great dark mode.
Yeah. Which will bring me to my next lightning round pick, which is a little extension called Dark Mode for Safari. It's the tiniest little extension for your Mac. But man, do I love it. Like, honestly, I mean, I wrote an article about this a long time ago about, in particular, why I really like Dark Mode, because I have some, like, visual issues that just Dark Mode makes a lot easier. And Apple introducing Dark Mode onto the Mac was like, amazing, right? Like manna straight from heaven. And the last big thing that didn't play well with dark mode is most web pages, and the dark mode for Safari little extension, it does a surprisingly good job of dark moding a whole ton of websites. And what I really like is, if you install this, I recommend you switch it into what they call softer dark mode, where it tries to match the very dark gray color that the Mac is using, which isn't really black at all. Like, it's much, much lighter, but it's a very comfortable color to look at. And so this makes most web pages fit in perfectly with dark mode on the Mac. A huge quality of life improvement. I totally love it. And it's very simple to add a site as an exception if you ever need to say, oh, don't mess around with the display of this page. This page has to be another way. So, big thumbs up for dark mode for Safari.
Instagram. Have you ever heard of this app?
Are you recommending Instagram? I don't recommend Instagram. I think Instagram makes you sad.
I'm not recommending it. It's just something that I use and this year have found a new love for. Instagram is my favorite social network. Contrary to you, it's the social network that makes me the happiest. It's full of things that I like. It's full of interests that I have, you know, that it's just like that are more visual and it allows me to see them, right? So like I'm interested in pens and watches and like Instagram's great for that stuff, right? Like I just get to see nice pictures of pens and nice pictures of watches as well as pictures of my friends. I like Instagram stories a lot. I've been using it more. They just added a feature called Close Friends, which is awesome. So you can set up a small group of people to share Instagram stories with, maybe of more like personal or private moments, as well as things that you can share with the whole world. I think it's an app that has been developed very nicely. I wish they had an iPad app, but I just figured I'm never going to get it. So it's just an app that I use on my phone. I've been using it more and more. You should follow me on Instagram if you don't already. I'm Mike on Instagram, I-M-Y-K-E. And I like it. It's my favorite social network to be on now. It's not as sad as Twitter is.
And for my next lightning round pick, then, I am choosing Self Control, an app that will allow you to block Instagram and any other sites that you may want to block. SelfControlApp.com. It is by far and away the most hardcore of the blockers. If, like me, you are a person who has too much technical knowledge for most of these blockers to be any kind of impedance on your laptop, Self-control is for you. So
very good if you decide you want to quit the internet for a period of time, I suppose.
Yes, yes. And I will also mention that if you scroll to their document support pages, you can find the instructions for how to turn it into extreme mode, which can last for as long as you want, as opposed to their normal use case, which is just a couple hours.
I don't like that. Do not like
SelfControlApp.com. Highly recommend.
Nope, not for me. Thank you very much. Overcast, still, I think, the best podcast app on iOS, purely because of the way it makes podcasts sound. I am not a believer in listening to shows at like 1.5 or 2 times. I know a lot of people do that. What I like about Overcast is it does really nice and sensible speed changes with what they call smart speed, what Marco calls smart speed. And it just removes the silences and just speeds up things very gently in certain places. I like it a lot. And I really liked some of the design changes that Marco did this year to like the now playing screen and stuff like that. I think it's given a new life to the app that I enjoy a lot. It's my favorite and has been my favorite for a long time, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, we know Marco, but I could still say like it's clearly the best podcast app, and the reason it sounds the best is because he's written this custom audio engine. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when I was listening to podcasts.
Yeah, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day. Overcast is the only one where I found I could crank up the speed without it, I don't know, sounding too choppy. So like especially if you do listen to podcasts fast, you should probably go with Overcast. It's great. My next lightning round pick is a little app called AutoWake. And if you wear your watch all day and all night, as I do.
Like I do, right? I wear my watch all day.
Yes, like you do as well, Mike.
Is that what we're talking about?
That's not what we're talking about.
Different watch, okay.
AutoWake, it's done by the same developer who does AutoSleep. And AutoWake is the thing that I have wanted on the watch for years and years, which is an alarm in the morning that does two things. One, it's vibration only, so it's vibration on the watch alarm. But that two is also keeping an eye on how awake you are and trying to time that alarm to wake you up at the correct point in your sleep cycle.
How is this even possible?
So I think it's running as an exercise entirely in the background. I think that's what it's doing. But you have to have it as a complication on the watch face that you are using.
Okay.
So I have a bedtime watch face for my Apple Watch, which is the modular mode all in red. And then one of those complications is auto wake. And like, I really love this. This, like, if you haven't tried this, having a dynamic alarm, it doesn't just wake you up at 6 o'clock, but you can give it a window of time to try to wake you up. And if it can't find a good spot until six, like, it will go at six. It's really great when it works. Like, you can completely tell the difference of, like, it caught me at the right moment. And one of the things I do really like about it as well is the developer has allowed you to set, like, this custom schedule so you can have different windows of time on different days if you want to say, like, oh, you can only have a 15-minute window on this day, but you can have an hour window on the weekend or whatever. It's very customizable. It works really well. I love it, and it's a thing that I've wanted for years. So auto-wake is one of my lightning picks.
This is really cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
You can integrate with HomeKit as well?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that I haven't even taken a look at. There's a lot of settings in auto-wake.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a very cool application. Huh. It's funny how I like seeing stuff like that where you're like, I don't even know that's possible. I like apps where you don't even know it's possible. Typically means they're doing something great.
Yeah, those are my favorite as well. Especially like sometimes you're with a group of people and you're doing something and then someone leans over and they're like, do you know there's an app that makes this 1,000 times easier? Like, oh, fantastic, right? Those are the best moments in life.
So, you know, I've spent a bunch of time on this episode talking about like applications being updated and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There is an application that I use every day that I think is a shining example of the kind of thing that I'm talking about frequent and meaningful updates, and it's Carrot Weather.
Oh my God, yeah.
That is an application that is constantly being updated with new and useful features, like in the way that I feel like more apps used to be. And It is a wonderful app. They moved to a subscription model, which maybe it helped this. Like, again, like I am not complaining if applications... If you're a developer who's not making any money, then fine. Like, stop updating your app. Like, if this isn't a business for you anymore, like, I don't want you to go hungry. Like, that's silly. But I also hope that more developers are spending time working on finding out how they can turn their apps into subscription models if that's what they need to remain in business, right? Like, cool. Like, I actively encourage that people do that. Because what Carrot Weather did, and I think it's one of the reasons that Carrot Weather has become even more and more awesome, is that the developers have a recurring revenue stream now because of the different like premium stuff that they added. And the features are so freaking good. Like, I love this app. It's so customizable. Like, I love that whenever I open this application, I get in a big, bold number the feels like temperature, because that's literally the only temperature I care about, but no other applications will let me customize it that way.
I'm totally with you on this. Yeah,
because who the hell needs the actual temperature?
I get into arguments from people about, like, I don't understand why anyone wants the actual temperature, but I feel like I'm a man totally isolated in this until hearing you say it. It was like, why do you want I want the feels like temperature. What other temperature matters? I don't understand.
What am I supposed to do with it? Like, so like right now, the actual temperature in London is 8 degrees Celsius, which is 46 degrees Fahrenheit. But the feels like temperature is 6 degrees Celsius, which is 42 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
That is a meaningful difference.
That is definitely a meaningful difference.
Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, oh, great. Like, scientifically, I'm prepared for the weather. No, I want the actual thing. So It's great. Like, I absolutely love this application. They're always adding... Like, they just added a new feature. Like, if you use this specific type of weather station, you can now integrate with that one. And it's a great app. Like, really just a brilliant app with loads of settings, which weather applications, like, yeah, give me all the settings. Like, give me all of them. I'll take them. It's great.
Because everyone's really fussy about their settings with a weather app. So, yeah, I love it. It makes me smile because, like, when they moved to the subscription, like the Premium Club, this is exactly the kind of app where it's like, great. You're perfect candidate, like utility app, please. Let me give you some amount of money. And I also love that they were, and again, app developers, take note of this. They were totally shameless when they added more stuff that they decided to add a super premium club. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like there's two levels of subscription. It's like, yeah, go for it, guys. Like, don't be shy about this. If you've added like a whole level, because that's like integration with your own personal weather station. Like,
yeah.
If There are super nerds that you're building a feature for that only a tiny portion of your users will use, but they'll love it. Like, that is what a super premium subscription is for. Like, that's do that. So yeah, I totally back it. I absolutely love Carrot. And I do have to say, for me, Carrot, thing I love about it is they have what I would regard as, sorry, Carrot, a tremendous amount of annoying bullshit in the app, which is like, there's hidden locations that you can find, and like, Carrot wants to be snarky with you, and there's little pictures of animals on the screen. And I am like the anti-person for that. But why I love Carrot is I can turn all of that off, right? And the people who love it can have it on. Like, every app should do that. Every app should do that.
Yeah, I like the design of it overall. I think it's very attractive, but also is useful for data. I think it shows data, a lot of data, in a good-looking way, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do, whilst having a personality.
Yeah, I visually like it a lot.
Yeah, but and then, like, you know, you can, and it has its, like, the little personality. I like, you know, I have it, I did a change, I've made a change. I have it set to, like, it's friendly, so it just says nice little things to me. Like, it says, blast, rain's about to begin. And that's cute. Right. Like, I like that. Like, why not? I don't need, like, rain, like, you know, like, give me the information I want in a way that I want it. Carrot Weather is just a wonderful application that I enjoy greatly.
Okay, I've got two final, very, actually, I'll do three.
Four, no, wait, five.
No. Okay, no, I'm going to finish up with three quick things, super quick lightning round, and then I'm done.
All right, okay.
Just Press Record is a great voice recorder for iOS. I don't use it often, but when I do, it's the nicest, the fastest, and also will automatically do a transcription of your voice recording, which is great.
Good Apple Watch app, too, if you have an LTE Apple Watch.
Yep, also works on the Apple Watch. And then two Mac apps that you'll know if you need them. The first one is called Gemini 2, which is a duplicate file deleter. I've tried a bunch of these. Gemini 2 works the best. I ran into a situation where, for various complicated reasons, I had hundreds and hundreds of duplicate video files, and boy, did Gemini 2 make that day go by much faster than it would have otherwise. And the last one, if you're back to the Mac, is a very old app called Fluid. But Fluid is an application that will allow you to turn a website into a standalone app.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yes. And I want to end on that one because I think that was in the first article that I wrote, right? That one was included in there. But boy, that's really nice. And I use it for brain.fm and a few other places that they just don't have a Mac app. And I don't want to open up Safari every time. So Fluid, if you're on the Mac a lot and there's some annoying website, you want it to pretend like it's a standalone app, Fluid will do that for you. So that's the end of my lightning round, Mike. What you got?
I can confirm that Fluid was not in the original post.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I thought it was.
I'm just going to give a couple of extras. Deliveries, which is the best package tracker around. Love that app. It's just a nice little application. Narwhal, which is my Reddit app of choice. I recommend Narwhal because everybody else recommends Apollo, and I really like Narwhal, and I think they don't get enough love because I think it's just, it's much more simple, and I really like it because I'm not a power user of Reddit. I just have like a couple of subreddits that I poke around in, and I think that Narwhal deserves a shout out every now and then because I think it just doesn't get them. Yeah, I think I'm good at that. Like, obviously, there's a bunch of stuff I use, but a lot of it is just stuff that everybody uses. I still use Pipedrive, my sales CRM tool. Could throw that one in there.
Part of your very important workflow, Mike. You can't change it.
Very important. Very important. CortexMerch.com.
CortexMerch.com.
If you want to have merch arrive with
you, I'm never ready.
I'm never ready. Like, I know it's coming, but I'm never ready.
It makes me laugh every time that you like, I can hear you hesitating and you're thinking, is he going to do it? And then it's always a disaster.
Because most of the time, I don't know you're ever going to say any of it. So my brain's already going.
Right. I know.
So
that's
Cortex
why, that's why I like this one.
.com. If you
CortexMerch.com.
If you want to have any Cortex merch arrive with you or a loved one for Christmas, December 19th is the last day to order to be confident that it will arrive if you live in the US. We still have a small number of the limited edition Cortexmas pins in stock, so you can get those along with a lot of the other stuff that we have, hats, hoodies, tees, and other regular pins as well. So go to cortexmerch.com to get those. I'm scared you're gonna do it again.
No, Mike, I wasn't gonna do it again because I know you're gonna transition into the next topic now. So I would never do cortexmerch.com then, unless I did. I don't know.
I want to talk about PodCon.
PodCon.
I'm going back to PodCon.
Going back to PodCon.
Going back to PodCon. It's in January 19th to 20th. It's in Seattle, Washington again, where it was last time. I'm gonna be there. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. I'll be able to share more about exactly what I'm doing soon, but I'm going to be on some panels and some fun stuff. I'm going to be doing something called a creator chat, which I did last time, where 12 people are in a room with me for an hour and we talk about the ins and outs of podcasting. It's a really valuable thing. I found it valuable for me, and I've heard from some people actually who were in my creator chat last year who have now gone on to start podcasts of their own. So I'm really excited to hear that, right? Because that's like exactly what it's for. That is something that there is limited space for, so you need to sign up for. So if you buy a ticket, you'll be sent a link to sign up for that. And I'm going to be doing a meet and greet like last time. And I've got a new poster. So you may remember I had a custom poster designed for people coming to my meet and greet signing at the last PodCon. It was only available to people that came, and I've been working on another one with the wonderful illustrator that I worked with last time, CJ Rowland. So just does incredible stuff, and I've got another one which I'm going to share this with you in a moment, Gray, so people will know, because I'm not going to share this ahead of time. You have to be there if you want to get it. This is going to be like a first-come, first-serve event. There will be information about this later on. You'll be sent all of the information about when all this stuff will be happening if you sign up for a PodCon ticket, once they've got all of that nailed down. But there, I think it's 100 people. So if you want to get one of these amazing posters and you can get it signed by me, if you're going to be at PodCon, this is the only way to do it. Now, Gray, I'm going to send you this incredible image that I have here.
I like that you're doing the poster again, Mike, because obviously it was a big hit last year.
Yep.
But I also find this sort of cute because I know you did the poster last year because you were terrified that you might be sitting in a booth, sad Mike, with no one there coming to visit you. And you were actually quite a huge deal at PodCon. So this year I expect you will also be quite a huge deal.
Don't get me wrong, Gray. I'm still doing it because I'm still terrified nobody's going to show up.
No, okay, but see, that's what I was working towards here, is I think it's sweet because I know that you're like deep down still a little worried, even though big podcasting deal, Mike Hurley, running a network on 1,002 shows as far as I know. Yep. So it's sweet that you're still having the poster made. But it was really awesome last year, and oh, it's just come through. Holy moly.
Yeah.
That is a lot of detail.
Yep.
I really like this.
Yep.
Now, I can't describe it to the people, can I?
Nope.
Not even just a little?
Maybe.
I'll describe it this way. It's Mike over Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? Is that enough?
Let me give you what this was here, right? The idea of this is I'm returning to PodCon. Let's think of this as like a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more like a movie.
Oh, just noticed one of the labels. The label that's behind you. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I love this even more than the first one. So if you want to get your hands on one of these, I'll share the image later on. But if you actually want one, the only way to get it is to come to PodCon. PodCon is amazing, by the way. If you don't know what it is like a podcast industry, creator, and fan event all rolled into one. There's a bunch of live shows. There's a bunch of panels. So whether you're somebody who wants to get into podcasting or you just love podcasts, there is something for you. It's bigger and better than last year. I'm really excited about it. I'm so happy that I get to attend and be involved. And I really hope that I get to see some of you there because it's a wonderful event and I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm super disappointed because last year I was like, oh, I couldn't make it for various reasons. And I was thinking next year I will definitely go. And having literally just a couple days ago arrived back in London from what was a dramatically longer trip than I expected. It's like, mm-hmm. I cannot turn around and go back to America on such short notice again. So I'm going to have to miss it. But I'm really annoyed. Right? It's like, I want to go to PodCon because you came back with stars in your eyes, mm-hmm. talking about how amazing it was. And I was like, I've got to go next year. And it's like, I think I might literally die if I had to step on a plane again so soon. So Mike. I can't. So I'm disappointed, but this poster is awesome. People should go see you. And it sounds like PodCon is amazing.
Gray.
Yes.
Our next episode, we're going to be talking about our yearly themes.
Oh, has the time finally come where we're allowed to discuss it?
Yep. So it's going to be our first episode of 2019 is going to be talking about our 2019 themes. I recommend, if you do not know what the Cortex yearly themes are, there is some homework for you. I recommend going back and listening to the episodes that we have spoken about this in the past. So I'll put some links in the show notes. There are now 3 episodes that encapsulate the yearly theme idea: episode 44, episode 45, and episode 62. These are the ones so far where we've discussed yearly themes, kind of when they were created, established, and then when we turned it into a thing where we would be talking about it every year. So we're going to be doing that in our next episode. So I will also ask, if you out there, the Cortex listeners, have questions that regard to yearly themes, or maybe you want to share your yearly themes with us, if you tweet with the hashtag AskCortex, we will address some of that too in our next episode, which is going to be a yearly theme extravaganza. And I've got mine all set, and I'm ready. I'm excited to talk about it.
I've been set for months. Literally months. So I'm excited to finally be allowed to discuss the yearly themes. If you haven't been with us as a Cortex listener since a previous yearly theme, I really think they are a good way to think about life. So if you are a new listener, I'm going to strongly, strongly suggest you listen to those old episodes. Get it in your head. Think about it. Ponder it over the holidays. And then join us at the beginning of the year for the yearly theme episode.